now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, our guest, Jerry Marzinski, returns to the Cosmic Switchboard Show to talk about the work that he and Sherry Sweeney are doing. They're coming out with a new book. They've been working very hard to get the message out that the intrusive thoughts and voices people are hearing is not a case of schizophrenia. There's a supernatural component involved. And Jerry is here now. And so without any further ado, Jerry Marzinski, welcome back to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Good to be back. Thanks for the invite.
Jerry, before we started, you talked about the book that you and Sherry are doing right now, are putting together. Can you give our viewers and listeners an idea of how you're constructing this book and the different themes that you want to put out?
Well, we're calling it an amazing journey into the psychotic mind, breaking the spell of the ivory tower. And we start off by going into the history of psychiatry and medicine, where back in 375 BC, I think it was, Hippocrates came up and said, hey, all illnesses have a physical cause. Prior to that, you had shamanism and all kinds of other different religions. Once that happened, they started finding, cleanliness helps, eating right helps, and the medical establishment started moving down a physical road until about 1911. Kraepelin, the father of psychiatry, found that schizophrenia had a circumscribed set of symptoms. So these symptoms appeared over and over and over again. And he declared, without any research, without anything to substantiate it, that schizophrenia and other mental illnesses also had a physical cause. And that's where things started getting very squirrely. They have never been able to find one. And the history of the treatments they've come up with, electroshock therapy, puke therapy, spinning chairs, forced standing, electrocuting the brain. They were actually injecting syphilis virus into people with schizophrenia for a while because they, not syphilis, it was the ones the mosquitoes inject, malaria. So they were injecting, I think it was malaria or typhus, into schizophrenics because the fever, when it rose, it would kill this disease, and they thought it might kill schizophrenia. So they would inject that, increase the, and get a fever going, but it had no effect on the schizophrenia, as well as drilling holes in their head and everything else. And this is, all these barbaric treatments have evolved now to psychiatric drugs, which are toxic. They're poison. They don't cure anything. All they do is suppress the symptoms. Very seldom where they get rid of them. And the psychiatrists are saying, you've got to stay on these for the rest of your life. And they're rotting out the parasympathetic nervous system, and they kill brain cells. So they're saying this is the only treatment available. And there are a number of others, among the ones that Sherry and I have found that actually work to cure this mental illness. And the only person who's written about that was Dr. Ermak in Turkey. And boy, when he even suggested they look at alternative treatments, such as what shamans have found and what Sherry and I have found, the establishment just attacked. They were like mad dogs. They not only attacked Dr. Ermak, they attacked the journal. And as long as they keep bucking up a physical tree, they can't conceive of an illness, a mental illness, or any illness that has no physical cause and no physical cure. It's just outside of their conceptual ability. And that's what schizophrenia is. It is driven by those voices. And once those voices are gone, all symptoms of schizophrenia leave with them.
Interesting also how so many of these barbaric treatments, and like you mentioned, drilling a hole in people's head to let out the ill humors or vapors or whatever was regarded as causing these problems, how closely those treatments, so-called, mirror forms of torture and mind control. Because a lot of the things that are being done to detainees in places, the sleep deprivation, the uncomfortable postures and positions they're forced to endure for extended periods of time. And in another age, they would have thought of these things as cures, you know, the spinning and all this other stuff. Now, you did mention the work of the Swedish mystic, and how right around the time when we took this wrong course, looking for a physical ailment for these essentially supernatural problems, was his name Swedenborg? That there's more to it than that.
Right. Now, Swedenborg's a very interesting character. He was one of the top scientists of his day. He was a metallurgist. He was a physician. He studied all over Europe. One of the top scientists. He was the mining engineer for the Queen of Sweden because he was making them a lot of money. Figured out ways to transport these huge battleships over land. And he was a Christian mystic. So his life was very, very interesting. After the peak of his scientific endeavors, I mean, where he was studying the body, and he was one of the top scientists of his day. At the age of about 55, he had a dream that said, are you ready? Are you ready? Or something to that effect. And at that point, he switched from, you know, he hit a dead end with studying physical science. It didn't bring the answers he was looking for. And then he turned into studying spirit and his whole life turned that way. He was given access to all of heaven and hell, and he would go into a trance and he would bring back this information about the people and the beings he spoke to over there. And he just wrote endlessly. He published in Latin because at that time, this information would not have been accepted. And he was a psychic. There was one lady came to him and said, listen, my husband has died. These creditors are sending me bills for this tea set that he hasn't paid for, and I need to find the receipt. I don't know where it is. So she goes to Swedenborg and said, would you go visit my husband and ask him where this receipt is? He goes into trance. So the next day he comes back, he goes, I know where it is. It's behind the drawer in his desk. And she found it. And it was thing after thing after thing like this. Even the Queen of Sweden came. She was carrying on, or her brother was carrying on, some interaction with a foreign power that was supposed to be top secret. And she asked Swedenborg to visit her brother and ask for some information related to this. And he comes back and he goes, I have it. And she says, okay, tell me. And they're in the court. And he goes, no, I can't tell you here. So she said, no, I have nothing to hide from my court. And he goes, no, I can't tell you this here. So after they all left, he tells her, he gives her that information, and she faints. There was no other way, nobody else who would know that. If he wasn't so useful to her, he might have been burnt as a witch or something. But he'd come back, he would speak to these evil spirits, and he'd speak to angelic spirits, and he'd speak to people who were dead. So there was a clinical psychologist who wrote the book, The Presence of Other Worlds, that I kind of ran into in my searching. And he unbeknownst to me, while I was at the state hospital, he had already published this book. He was working at a psychiatric hospital, private psychiatric hospital in California. And he was a student of Swedenborg. And he read about what Swedenborg wrote with his conversations with evil spirits, right? And what they said and how they acted and what they told him. And he saw a remarkable similarity between these evil spirits that Swedenborg was describing and the voices that he was studying. And he not only studied them, he was trying to make friends with them so he could learn more about them. And he would talk to them and carry on conversations with them, which I also did for a good while. And they come across as coherent. They are not word salad. In most cases, if you can get them to speak to you, they're perfectly coherent, but they're nasty. They're very nasty. So he tried to befriend them and tell them, well, I just want to know what's going on with you and how this operates. He saw that these voices were really screwing up these patients and that they had kind of taken control of the patient's mind, and they were talking to them and telling them rotten things about themselves, everybody else. Now, once he went so far, he couldn't learn any more. But one thing he kind of bottomed out, because they were only going to tell him so much. Now, a couple of things he did that was interesting. He did give a MMPI, which is the gold standard test for psychologists, independently to some of his patients, and then independently to the voices, asking the voices to respond to the questions on this personality test and not the patient. And he came back and said, after giving MMPIs and Rorschach tests, he said that the voices were much more psychotic than the patient was. I found that very interesting. So he kind of forged a link. And when I ran into his writings, I went, he's doing the same thing I was, but I never tried to make friends with these things. I always knew they were dangerous. I always knew they were destroying my patients. I always knew that they were causing the problems, and they were always an enemy. And once you treat them as an enemy and start attacking them and starting to dismantle what they're doing, then this whole other array comes into being. Now they're fighting for their lives, and all their tricks start coming out. And you start getting hit with these strange things, and some of them pretty terrifying. And I think I told you the breaking point was one day where, one after another, I was figuring out ways to interfere with these voices so they had less control over my patients. And the patients kept coming in and going, and this was at the prison, they're really getting pissed with you. The voices are really getting pissed with you. And I'm thinking, hallucination is getting pissed with me. That doesn't bode well. What kind of hallucination would get pissed with you? Hallucinations are supposed to be random. These things were consistently negative. So here's Swedenborg saying the same thing. And here's Van Dusen equates Swedenborg with what he's saying. And I see what Swedenborg, and I just devoured Swedenborg's writings. I picked up his Heaven and Hell and I read it until I almost passed out. And it was what I was actually experiencing with my psychiatric patients. And it matched exactly what Dr. Van Dusen was saying in California. So we were all talking about the same things. And that's one of the things our book does, is we're blending consistencies of Wilson Van Dusen, clinical psychologist, Swedenborg, Sherry's experiences, and my experiences into one coherent stream. So it's over a couple of hundred years of experience with the voices from people who've been there. This is frontline stuff. None of this will you find in any kind of psychology book. and it talks how they operate, what to expect out of them, and what you can do about them in the state of psychiatry and psychology right now, which are the biggest impediments. As long as they keep insisting that the voices are hallucinations and ignoring them, they're never going to get there, because they are not hallucinations. They are very real. You can carry on conversations with them. They affect physical reality. And they can be gotten rid of, and they can be weakened without drugs. You know, these drugs are toxic. They cause, with long-term use, they kill your peripheral nervous system, and they're killing brain cells constantly. Long-term use, they'll turn you into a vegetable. At Central State Hospital, they called it the Thorazine Shuffle. These guys kind of, their nervous systems were shot. They just kind of shuffled around. So Heaven and Hell is the book that Emanuel Swedenborg, that's his defining work, where he talks about both positive and negative spirits. And what Swedenborg says is that no thought that comes into your head belongs to you. It either comes from a positive source or a negative source. And that on this planet, the negative is in control, or has been up until now, and there's a huge battle going on. So, and you can kind of verify that for yourself. I mean, before people had language, before a kid has language, they're not out shooting anybody or killing things or causing trouble. I mean, it takes language. And what they do is they come in and they take control of that dialogue that is constantly going on in your head. Now, one thing that people need to wake up to is they are not that dialogue. A lot of people think that they are their thoughts. And that's very dangerous. And Swedenborg says that is not the case at all. And if you step back and you listen to your thoughts, and they're constantly in there rambling around. And if you listen to them, most of it is bullcrap. You know, it's just what's happening in the future, worry about this, worry about that, fearful thoughts, thoughts of lack of money. A lot of negative stuff is coming in there. Where does it come from? If you step back and look at it, who's the watcher? Who's watching this? And if you listen to it, who's the listener? So you're not your thoughts. It's this dialogue that kind of keeps going around in your head, and it's based on your past experiences and the programming, you know, of the medical mafia and the academic eggheads and everything that's coming at you.
What we're seeing is the promotion of these pathologies, Jerry. We talked about this before we started, how so much of the the lamestream media, the academic quacks, the medical mafia, everything is a promotion of these various pathologies, psychopathic behaviors, narcissistic behaviors, and everything seems to be driven to drive the emotional content and push people's emotional hot buttons, whether it be about making a threat of the climate, whether it's making an issue out of race, whatever the case may be. So that's constantly promoted in the media, and it seems to have an effect on the gullible, I hate to say it, and the dangerously naive, who are not aware that in the spirit world, thoughts are things. And when the thoughts are melded with emotion, and that lizard part of the brain, the R complex, becomes engaged, and the anger can be directed in a certain direction, how that plays out to the masses. Did you want to comment on how that process is playing out?
Well, it must be understood that the voices don't just exist in the heads of schizophrenics. Okay, they're hitting us all to different degrees. It's the schizophrenic where it's most clear that they have taken over, and you can see that. Now, what these things survive on is negative emotional energy. And I found that out one day where I brought the book into, I brought a book from a shaman in that was stating that. And Carlos Castaneda kind of said the same thing. And he, if you read his series, he's leading up, but he wouldn't come out till the very end where he said, they give us their minds. And this is what he was talking about. And schizophrenics, they have taken over the minds of these patients. And they are inserting thoughts, constant negative. And you look at it, these thoughts are constantly negative. And they don't study thoughts. In psychiatry, psychology, they're not looking at the thought process. You know, they say, oh, it's a dysfunctional thought, or it's a, what do they call it? Thought disorder. They call it a thought disorder. But do you think they study the thoughts? No. Not once. Not at all. And if you try to ask these guys what they're thinking, they jump all over you. You know? So these entities feed on negative emotional energy, and they generate that negative emotional energy by putting negative, fearful thoughts into people's head, mostly centered around fear and death are the two biggies. Poverty is another one. Not knowing what's happening. As long as they can keep injecting these thoughts and generating that negative emotional energy, that's their food. If they can start a war, if they can start a class, you know, classes fighting against one another, like they're trying to do now, where Soros is sending all these people into Europe to cause all this consternation and turmoil, which he's done a good job of, the more fear and anger and anxiety and negative emotion can be generated, the more these things feed. And if they can start a war, that's like a hog's trough for them. So what Swedenborg is saying is that there has to be a balance, you know, between positive and negative, and it's a dualistic universe. And so there are positive forces, there's negative forces. And if the voices could speak to you, they would say, we control this planet because we control the thought of people. You know, we're the ones who put thoughts in people's head. We're not begging for people to go to the Bible and put, you know, positive thoughts into their head, because the good side doesn't work like that. It speaks more in feelings and intuition. It's a lot quieter. It's a lot harder. And if they can keep you distracted with the negative, you're not going to move toward the positive. You know, you're going to be fixated on the negative, and then that engenders more negative. But if you sit back and you watch your thoughts, they don't flow into your head. They just pop in, and you're there. And you're in this situation. Road rage. I mean, all of a sudden, bam, this thought comes into your head. That's a jerk. I'd like to punch him out. And where do those thoughts come from? You know, here the other day, I mean, they trapped me well. We have these pack rats here that are extremely destructive. I mean, if they, you know, it's been a constant war out here with them, out in the desert. And, you know, I tried to drive them off. I put mothballs in there, in the shed I have in the back. I put just soap out, everything I could think of. I put a light out there, so when they come out there, the light goes on, and hopefully, they chewed the wires. So I had to start putting traps out there, and I hate killing them because they're these furry, cute little things. So I'd kind of not want to kill them, but you can't take them anywhere because then they bother the neighbors. But if you don't do something about them, they cause a lot of destruction. So I put a trap out there, and I'd kind of try to avoid shooting them because I hate doing that. Sometimes they died in that trap, but that's a horrible death, you know, because they're basically starving to death. And I caught one the other day, and I saw them in there. Well, oh, God, not another one, because I hate dealing with it. So I left them out there for a couple of days. And then the third day I went back and I said, okay, if he's still alive, I'm going to either shoot him or let him go. And I went into the cage, and here's the big mother rat with her head stuck in the bars, and here's this little baby rat right next to her dead mother. And I looked at that and I was horrified. I was absolutely horrified. It was like, oh, this is, I can't deal with this. This is awful. I, you know, it's like, now what do I do with the baby? I can't kill the baby, you know? And it was just traumatizing. I mean, it was, and all that day, this thought of that vision kept coming into my head, you know, all day long. It was like, pop, here's this vision of this dead mother rat with her head stuck in the bars, with her last ounce of life giving birth to this baby so it might live. And here's this little baby looking back at me with its dead mother. And I'm like, just, oh my God, all day long, all friggin' day long. And I'm sitting here watching that thought pop in. And then I think, am I putting that thought there? Do I want to experience that thought? No. Is it my intention to be tortured by that thought over and over and over again for who knows how long? No, that's not my intention. So who's putting that thought in my head, and where is it coming from? Because I don't want it. It's not my intention that it be there. I don't want to deal with it. It's done and over with, but yet it keeps coming. And I could just see it. You know, these things aren't, for the most part, a visible force. They invade your mind, and they insert thoughts, negative thoughts. And then they feed off of the reaction. So if they can get that going with everybody in Europe, with, you know, all these Syrians are coming in, and the European countries are being flooded, and there's a lot of turmoil, and these groups are not going to ever come together, and then China showing off their military weaponry, just keep the fear rolling. As long as they can keep the fear rolling, they're going to keep feeding, and they're going to, you know, keep getting stronger and stronger. So there is a supernatural, evil, negative force. Now, I wouldn't say it's evil. I mean, it's part of the way the universe is structured. So what Swedenborg is saying is, okay, you have the positive, you have the negative. You have to have a neutral place in between where you are the one that does the choosing. And you either choose to entertain positive, or you start moving toward negative and pay attention to that. Whatever you give your attention to, you're giving energy to. So it's more like a radio station where you tune to a different station and start tuning out the negative. You can be aware of it, but don't be fixated on it. And if you look at the news every night, it's all horrible stuff. It's encouraging, the battle that's going on right now that Trump is leading up. You know, there's no doubt he's protected. I mean, John F. Kennedy was assassinated by the deep state for much less than this.
We're just seeing this constant promotion of all these pathologies to the point now where these Extinction Rebellion people are jumping up on top of the trains in London and preventing all these commuters from going to work, and it's driving the commuters into a state of frenzy because they actually have to work for a living, right? Whereas these ponces that are up on the trains, someone's funding them. They fit a psych profile of a rage-filled character like you just talked about in the spirit world, thoughts or things. Now, before we got started, we also talked about how others, similar kind of running a parallel track to Swedenborg and that psychologist you talked about and your work, how these discussions of the archons and what the Gnostics call the demiurge, this negative, essentially spiritual pervasive force, has this malign influence on people. And did you want to elaborate on that?
Well, yeah, the Gnostics were the first ones to come up with this stuff. You know, they were the first ones to come out and go, yeah, there is an evil force that pervades this planet and rules and runs this planet. And it's been there since the, you know, the dawn of time. And it doesn't take a physical form. So they described that. So it's like a pervasive parasitic entity. A negative force that it generates fear and sorrow and rage and negative emotions. They were onto this long ago. Now, where Christianity, I think, fails is they focus that onto a devil, you know, and like a one entity thing removed from our own psychic mind, you know, removed from our own life. The devil's out there, you know, you better watch for him. He's here, he's there, he's in drugs, he's in, you know, hanging out with wrong people. The devil's there. The devil is in us, and it's injecting its thoughts in us. So there's always a constant internal battle going on. If you step back and watch it, you'll see it.
And what the church has done too is they've inserted all these dogmas, basically fear-based
exactly.
creeds, to keep you in line so you don't become corrupted by the devil.
Right, fear. You know, if fear God, you know, if you do this, God will punish you. I mean, that's what these things feed off of, is fear. And here's the church generating this. You know? And the other thing is like, it's like, okay, the devil isn't here now. He'll get you when you die. You know, when you die, he'll get you. So if you're not good now, he'll get you later.
They cover all the bases.
Cover all the bases. So it's kind of like, oh, you don't have to worry about the devil now. You just be good now. And then the Catholic Church come along with what are these things they had. I forgot what they call them, but you pay them a certain amount of money and they erase your, somehow erase all your
indulgences.
Sins.
Indulgences.
Indulgences, you know. So, I mean, it's insane. It's just.
It's topsy-turvy. It's not only that you suffer after you die, it's eternal torment, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And then they erase the doctrine of reincarnation, which was the norm, you know, through most traditional societies around the world. So they're saying you got one shot, you.
Right.
Original sin-based individual, right. Cretin you.
And then you're not going to make it.
And you ain't going to make it.
So you better fear and brace yourself because you're going to hell.
And that fear led to the mass genocide of females of all ages, you know, the witch hunts, which lasted for centuries.
Well, it's not just witch hunts. It's the, what do you call it, the insurrection or the Inquisition.
The Inquisition.
Look at how many people killed, the wars with the Crusades.
And
all of that run by the I guess you'd call them the Archons. You know, these same entities that attack us all. And don't think that they're not getting you all the time. They're getting you all the time.
Yes.
All the time.
And look what's happening also. Like for me, for a long time, as far as major sports are concerned, I only really follow baseball anymore because basketball and American football, gridiron, are just a pale imitation of what they used to be in the 70s. So, but what I'm seeing also is how this pervasive creep of the archontic negative influence has now pervaded virtually all sports. Where now, you know, these issues with China have come up with the National Basketball Association, where these issues with the National Football League, suddenly they're swamped with all this stuff about you know, issues of racism and race baiting and race divide. So one can't not even tune out this negative world by immersing themselves in sports for 2 hours, because now the sports has it too. So one. They're gradually limiting our options as far as where we can go to detach ourselves from this. And that's why the mystics of yore always talked about stilling the mind, going within, blocking out the external malign influences, that internal dialogue that Carlos Castaneda talked about.
Well, what's tricky about that, and I kind of learned this from the psychotics themselves, is they would try to block out the voices. They do their best, and they try to ignore them. And in the state hospital, you'd see them walking around with headphones blasting music. Now, that did work. It drowned them out. But the harder you push against them trying to block them out, the harder they push back. And they were totally unsuccessful in ignoring or blocking out these negative thoughts that these entities are putting in their heads. You know, it's what you resist persists. So when, first of all, you got to be aware of what you're thinking. You know, pop in every once in a while and check in with yourself, because your mind will just keep going, you know, and you step back and say, where'd that thought come from? Or what am I thinking now? And be aware of negative thoughts coming in there. Don't try to block them. Say, okay, I acknowledge it. It's not mine. Leave and just let go of it. Don't concentrate on it. Don't obsess over it. I mean, I could obsess over that rat thing for months. I mean, that to me, that was so horrifying to have to experience that. But, you know, they had me trapped on that one. Now, they could have milked that for a long time.
Yeah, and look at the dynamic, Jerry. You're an empathic, caring person who loves all life forms. And so for this to happen to you, because these animals were becoming a nuisance, you know, what some regard as a nuisance animal. Like, for example, here we have these really cute bunnies that come into our backyard, and I love them. I love looking at them. But to others, they're considered a nuisance animal. They've actually sprayed. They've done aerial spraying of a virus that's supposedly only directed at the rabbits to kill them, right? Wow. And who knows, you know, I mean, gee, what can possibly go wrong, right? So they're going around spraying these communities that have a lot of rabbits. But I love rabbits. I love looking at them. I love watching them chew our grass. And in the previous house I lived at, we have these really cute, what they call bush rats here. These are not nuisance animals that like live in garbage. These are native to the Australian bush, hence the term bush rats, right? And, you know, we found in our backyard this poisoned bush rat, and it was laying there in its final death throes. And its companion or friend or mate or whatever was tapping it, trying to like revive it. And so like in the case with you, that image of this rat trying to say, don't die, don't leave me, right? To the other rat that had been poisoned. And one of our neighbors had decreed in their own mind, oh, this is a nuisance animal. No, it's not. It's a native. It's like a koala or it's like a possum. It's a natural Australian animal. And yet here they are killing it, just like they're spraying all this stuff to get, okay, the bunnies didn't come here, they were brought here. I mean, they weren't original here, they brought them here, but now they're here. You got to deal with them, right? Some people say, oh, they're nuisances, but they're trying to go around and killing them. And so for people like us with a degree of empathy, it can be an issue, and that plays on us too. See, us, the image of it.
Note that, you know, those thoughts are being put there and festered by these entities. You know, one thing I saw that they have complete access to the mind of a schizophrenic, and ours too. They would go into the minds of these patients and they would pull up rotten things they had done 30 years ago that they'd long forgotten about. And they would put it in their face and go, look, you're rotten. You did this. You remember you did this? I mean, I've seen that over and over and over again. So they have complete access to your mind. And they want you to think that your thoughts are yours. And that's the assumption. Well, who else's thoughts could they be? Nobody ever said that thoughts come from somewhere else. Psychology and psychiatry won't even look at it. You know, Swedenborg does. He does a real good job of pointing out that your thoughts come in from other places, like radio waves, you know, and it's up to you to do the tuning of where you want them to go, but that takes some active effort and consciousness. You have to be aware of what you're thinking and when you're thinking and watch these things pop into your head, you know. So everybody has a story, and that story keeps repeating over and over again, looking for verification in the outside world. You know, this is the way things really are, and here's the evidence. I mean, I know this isn't, and you're collecting that evidence all the time to keep that story going, but it's only a story, and everybody has a different story, and it's not real. You know, it's based in the past and the future. In neither place you can live. And once you move out of the present, then the anxiety starts, you know. All this bad stuff from the past, all this fear from the future. The only time you can really live is in the present. And these these entities don't want you to do that.
Yes.
They want to distract you and control your thought processes.
The eternal now is where it's at. But what they get is, they get us so caught up in whatever misdeeds, real or imagined, right, that we've done in the past. Like that used to happen to me, Jerry, where I was so shame-based growing up, and it's still, I'm a work in progress. It's taken a while for me to.
Everybody is. There are no finished products here.
That's right. And so, like, you know, a social gathering, a party, whatever the case may be, hours after the fact, days after the fact, I say to myself, did I say something to offend that person?
Yeah.
I didn't mean it that way. Did they take it wrong? Did I hurt their feelings? And for days afterwards, I'd be wondering, did I make that person feel poorly about themselves because of, you know, something I said or did and didn't realize what I was doing? And those thoughts would just consume me, Jerry. And meanwhile, these entities are getting a feed at my expense.
And you'll notice your energy level starts dropping.
Yes.
You know, you start becoming depressed.
With
the schizophrenics, after the voices hit them, they were so drained that they couldn't even get out of bed. And you go, okay, where did their energy go? They were just laying in bed all night, and they can't get out in the morning. You know, so they're drained time after time after time.
And people call that depression, Jerry.
Right. And then the psychiatrists say, okay, let's drug it.
Let's drug it. That's right. It's all about giving a feed, an emotional feed of these entities. And look how these entities and the system around it that supports it, the media and everything else, promotes these various pathologies. The narcissism, the freeloader mentality, the sense of self-entitlement, the materialism, the feckless, hedonistic attitude which they're promoting, especially amongst the young. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, they make them really feckless and really hedonistic and narcissistic. On the other hand, they make them obedient, obeisant to authority, right? Because they've removed that critical thinking process and replaced it with reactions, strong emotional reactions to themes that have been promoted, be it the climate, be it fear, be it terrorism, be it war. And so we find ourselves, it's really a spiritual warfare of manifesting on the physical plane, Jerry.
It sure is. And one of the biggest things they take advantage of is people that are just drifting through life, that have no goal, that have no, you know, they'll just jump in there and go, oh, you don't have a goal? Well, let us give you one. You know, and a lot of those guys end up in prison. You know, they have to have a space in your mind to operate. And if you're a free thinker and you're keeping busy and you're doing something productive and you're not sitting around idle, they have a harder time taking control. Where if you're bored and you're listless and you're just drifting through life and you have no goals and you're not involved in anything productive, they'll just move in there and go, hey, man, this is wide open territory. We'll just kind of move in.
Well, nature and even supernature, if that's a word, abhors a vacuum. It will seek to fill a vacuum. So whatever void we have in our life, which manifests to our consciousness as boredom or lack of something to do, suddenly all these thoughts come in. And what we do subconsciously and probably through the malign influence of these entities, Jerry, is we overcompensate, whether it's through self-medication, like prescription or illicit drug use, substance abuse of one form or another, pornography, whatever the case may be. There's always something of an archontic nature to fill the void, to so we can have our needs met at some level, right?
And fast. And you look at psychiatry and the pharmacology.
Well, you've been listening to our guest, Jerry Marzinski, talk about Emanuel Swedenborg and how Swedenborg was pointing out these spiritual, supernatural issues related to our minds way back when. And he's been talking about the pernicious, pervasive influence of these negative entities and how they affect us in so many different ways. So we've reached the end of a fascinating first segment with our guest, Jerry Marzinski, and we're just getting started. So we'll see you at the top of the next segment. If you like what we do, if you believe in what we do here at the Cosmic Switchboard Show, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you soon.